Holding on Kuf Dalet Amud Aleph at the Mishnah.
Kuf Dalet Amud Aleph.
Kuf Dalet Amud Aleph, yeah. So we're still on the subject of things that are different in the Bais Hamikdash versus anywhere else. We had we started with dinim that are, well, all of them have been dinim of Hilchos Shabbos, where we say that we're not gozer certain things, we're not gozer certain dinim, certain derabanan in the Bais Hamikdash. Tosfos had said in a couple of places that where it's a shvus gadol, where it's a major shvus, then we do, but ordinarily we don't. So the Mishnah says, here's another one. Boizkin melech agabe kevesh. They're allowed to spread out and cut out and break up salt on the kevesh, on the ramp of the Mizbeach. The point is, in other words, Rashi says, when it's rainy, then it's slippery because it's a ramp. It slopes upward. So it's slippery. So therefore, they would put salt over there in order that this way the kohenim have some traction. This way they don't slip. Remember, they're walking barefoot.
It's in the air.
No, we're talking about on the kevish, on the ramp of the Mizbeach.
The kevish was under the sky?
Yeah, the whole Azara was under the sky, yeah. Okay. So therefore, it would get rainy, maybe even sometimes snowy.
Even when it's not rainy, no?
Well, if it's not rainy, then I suppose.
Spill there.
Yeah, maybe, but it's more when it's rainy, then all the more so. So that would mm-hmm. sprinkle salt over there in order that it shouldn't be slippery. V'shvil shalo yachliku, in order that the kohenim don't slip on the kevish. Another thing in the Bais Hamikdash, when malin bin bor ha-goyla, when we bor ha-godol, they're allowed to fill up. They're allowed to fill up water from the Bord HaGoyla, which is a well, actually a pit to be exact, that they had in the both of them are pits of water that they had in the Bais Hamikdash. Bord HaGoyla, one explanation, it's called Goyla because the Oyle Goyla, the people who came from Golis Bavel, who to rebuild the second Bais Hamikdash, dug it. Mm-hmm. Another explanation, it's not actually Goyla, but rather Gula, like we find in the Haftarah, the first of Shabbos Hanukkah, the Gula Al Rosha, which means like a bowl. No, it means like a bowl. Over there, it's talking about a bowl full of oil that was above the menorah, from which oil is dripping down into the menorah. So here, it was a similar kind of thing, like it was a bowl or a large pitcher or something above it, from which they would draw water. So you're allowed to fill up water from that and from Bord HaGadol, from the large bur, Begalgal, we're using a water wheel. So we're talking about, in other words, we're not talking about dipping a bucket in and filling up water. That you could do from any bur on Shabbos. We're talking about where you have a water wheel above it, the kind that has a bunch of buckets attached to it. And as you turn the wheel, then the buckets lower down and then lift up. So we'll see in the Gemara reasons why you might not be able to use that on Shabbos in most places. But in the Bais Hamikdash, again, most Shvusim, most Isurim Derabanan don't apply in the Bais Hamikdash. Therefore, you're allowed to be Shabbos. So therefore, you're allowed to fill up with them on Shabbos.
But that turned in the Bais Hamikdash. It was in private. It was in Rosh Hashanah.
No, they were talking about it. We're not talking about a matter of Rosh Hashanah and Rosh Hashanah. The reasons why is because of other. Remember, if it's a Daradaisi, you can't override it in the Bais Hamikdash, only if it's a Derabanan. So we'll see in the Gemara two possible reasons what the problem is ordinarily using a water wheel on Shabbos. So you're allowed to, but nevertheless, the Bord HaGoyla and the Bord HaGadol, you're allowed to on Shabbos because of the Bais Hamikdash and Ein Shavus Hamikdash. Umi Be'er HaKar B'yomtiv. You're also allowed to fill up using a water wheel from the Be'er HaKar or Heker or however it's pronounced or whatever on Yomtiv. The Gemara will explain what the Be'er HaKar is. We're going to say you're allowed to do it on Yom Tov, but not on Shabbos. We're going to explain at the top of Amud Beis what the Be'er HaKar is and why it's different than most wells. So the Gemara starts off. Rami le'Rav Ika mipashrunya le'Rav. Rav Ika mipashrunya is the name of a city in Bavel someplace. So he asked a contradiction to Rav. You're saying that in the Bais Hamikdash they're allowed to sprinkle salt on the kevish on the ramp of the Mizbeach so that they don't slip, implying you're only allowed to do that in the Bais Hamikdash, not anywhere else. As we've been having in this whole series of Mishnayos, these are things that you're allowed to do in the Bais Hamikdash because Ein Shavus Bamikdash, but not anywhere else. But I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, if a chotzer got muddy because of rain, so now it's hard to walk around it because of the mud, maybe teben, you're allowed to bring straw or meradaba and spread it out and then spread out the straw on the ground over there in order that now it's not so muddy and you're able to walk around. We're talking about Tevin for other purposes. We talk about, for example, if you use Tevin, let's say to fill up, if you have, for example, a ditch between two chatseiras and it's filled up with Tevin, we talked about that. We didn't really talk about spreading out Tevin in order to, because of the mud. I don't think we really talked about that. Okay, anyway, maybe you remember it from last time around. Anyway, so the point is that we see, I don't know, I'll think about it afterwards, but okay, anyway. So we see that even in the Medina, you're allowed to do things in order to get traction, in order to be able to walk over there. So why are we saying only in the Bais Hamikdash? The answer is shiny tevin dolay mevatel, because the difference is that straw, you're not going to be mevatel there. Eventually, you want to use the straw for animal food or for making bricks or mortar or whatever. So therefore, you're not going to be mevatel it for there permanently. The straw, on the other hand, the assumption at this point is once you once you put the salt over there and people are walking all over it, you're not going to take the salt off the ground over there. It's like when you salt your sidewalk, you don't afterwards collect the salt over there in order to use it. So. Oh, somebody's by the door.
No, I was just looking to see if maybe it was an intruder or something.
Okay.
It sounded regular.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Which then brings a question that Rav Acha Brei de Rava asked Rav Ashi. Hai melach hechidomi. Well, then what's the scenario with the salt over here? If you're talking about that in the Bais Hamikdash, we're talking about he is mevatlet over there on the ground, and then you're saying that in the Bais Hamikdash, so outside the Bais Hamikdash, such a thing would not be allowed. We're only allowing it with straw because you're not mevatel it there anyway. But we're saying if it was something you were going to be mevatel, you wouldn't be allowed to. And in the Bais Hamikdash, we're saying you can be mevatel it there, you're permanently going to leave it on the kevesh, and it doesn't matter because ain shavus b'mikdash. The problem with that is kamoisif abinyan. It comes out then that you're adding to the structure of the Bais Hamikdash, which means, therefore, Rashi says, so it comes out that it's not only a problem on Shabbos, even on weekdays, the structure of the Bais Hamikdash is exactly given down to the fraction of an amma by Hashem to David HaMelech, who in turn gave it over to Shlomo. So the Gemara mentions, the Pasuk says that David says to Shlomo, everything was given to me in writing that Hashem made me understand. Now, the reason it's in parenthesis is because the Marshal takes it out because it seems Rashi is not going to sit. Rashi himself mentions this pasuk, which if the Gemara had mentioned it, he wouldn't have to mention it also. Also, Rashi brings a second explanation, although he doesn't like it, that we're talking about the problem is Shabbos. The problem is that if you're putting it on Shabbos, then you're doing binyan. However, Rashi says that no, there's a different Gemara elsewhere in Chulin that mentions this concept, and there it's not in connection with Shabbos, and we still see that it's an issue. So nothing to do with Hilchas Shabbos. Then has to do strictly with there's more Gemaras on the shelf over there. It has to do strictly with the fact that you can't.
There's two Gemaras right there. Next one.
Yeah.
Right there, the bottom.
So it has strictly to do with the fact that you can't add to the structure of the Bais Hamikdash. If the blueprint that was given to David HaMelech is that the Kevesh is exactly a certain size, then you can't add to it by putting salt on it and leaving it there permanently. Well, it doesn't necessarily, well, maybe it melts in the rain, but okay, afterwards it stays there also. And okay, eventually over time it mounts up and you have more and more. You have the Kevesh gets thicker and thicker over time. You add salt.
Don't they clean up this space every day?
Not necessarily. No, the point is that we're leaving it over there. The point is if you're leaving it over there, so then it's in this bottle over there. Eventually, it gets ground into the structure, and then the structure is now bigger than it was before.
So it's only by Erev Pesach where they can clean out the.
So then, they would wash out the azara, particularly on Erev Pesach. It doesn't necessarily say the rest of the time, and it doesn't necessarily say that they would clean the kevesh any particular time. Like, okay, maybe once a year it says they would clean up the mizbeach or whatever, but still by that time the salt has long since been embedded in. So if you're mevatalot over there, then you're moisif abinyan, the igaloika mevatle, and if you're gonna say you're not mevatalot, and therefore then you have kaveh chatzitza, then you have a problem that it's chatzitza between the kohenim's feet and the kevesh. The answer is, we're talking about you are in fact mevatelet. You're not in fact mevatelet. So in other words, you are planning to collect that salt later, because later on, okay, they're not going to use the salt for food, obviously, once people have stepped on it. But Rashi explains later on, they can use it to salt the skins of the kodshim. Later on, all the skins of the kodshim are not burnt on the mizbeach. In the case of a korban ola, the Torah tells us that the skin goes to the koyanim of that mishmo that did the avoda. In the case of private people's korbanos, the skin goes to them. So therefore, you have all those skins need to be salted, because at the first stage of preparing them into leather or something. So therefore, so they had, yeah. So the first stage of preparing a skin into leather or parchment or whatever is to salt it. So therefore, so they would salt them there in the Bais HaMikdash, and they had in fact one of the chambers in the Bais HaMikdash was Lishkas HaMelech, where they kept salt, and this salt that they put on the kebish, they could reuse it afterwards for that purpose.
They could use the kebish again.
Well, they could use it for the kebish again, but the point is that they don't have to wait until the next time it rains. They can use it in between. After it finishes raining, they can collect the salt. And depending how rainy it was. If it was too rainy, I guess then most of the salt is getting washed away. But I guess if it's just drizzling or whatever, then enough of the salt is there afterwards that they can collect it. So the question is that it's a chatzitza. Then in that case, as long as they're walking on it.
Kind of salt, because you know if you go like in the Dead Sea, I wouldn't want to walk on salt there because it's slippery.
Well, no, but the Dead Sea, it's not slit. No, but it's oily, really. Yeah. So, okay, you wouldn't want to use necessarily a high concentration of salt. But yeah, you'd use regular, you'd use regular rock salt or whatever, Mustama. Yeah.
Kosher salt.
Yeah. Kosher salt. Yeah. Or rock salt or whatever. Yeah.
Kosher
salt. Okay. Anyway, so the answer is, b'chilochas evorim l'kevish. The answer is, we're talking about when would they spread the salt, when the kohenim are bringing the limbs of the korbanos to the kevish. D'lav avoydahi, that is not an avoida. So therefore, at that point, it doesn't matter if there's a chatzitza between their feet and the kevish. But the Gemara asks, Veloy, you're telling me that bringing over the Ivorim and putting them on the kevish is not an avoid?
There's a lot of that.
But not so much that there was a lottery. That's true that there was a lottery, and we're going to learn about it in Masechet Yoma when the time comes to that, Bez Hashem. But more to the point, also, the Pasuk says the Kohen should offer everything and burn it on the Mizbeach. And since Rashi says earlier in the Pasuk, it says that he should take the kishkis of the animal, the kerev, and the kraayim, the legs and knees of the animal, and wash them with water. That means we're talking at this point about what's being done with the evorim. We already had the blood was sprinkled on the mizbeach. The havamina of the Gemara had been that once we finished sprinkling the blood on the mizbeach, then everything else after that is not an avoid. But no, because you have the posik mentions that you have to take the kishkis and the legs of the animal together with everything else and burn them on the mizbeach. So therefore, the implication is now we're talking about the evorim. And the Pasuk says v'hikriv akoyen es akoyel, that the koyen has to bring everything and offer it on the mizbeach, meaning that bringing it to the kevish from where then they take them one at a time off the kevish and bring them up to the top of the mizbeach and throw them onto the fire is also part of the avoda. The fact that it says akoyen means that all the usual rules of kahuna apply. It has to be a koyen and not a zor. He has to be wearing big de kahuna, and there can't be a chatzitza between his feet and the floor. So that's also an avoda. We learn, in fact, in Yuma, in connection with that discussion over there about the raffles, the piosos that they had for that, like you mentioned, that this is an avoda, that bringing the limbs to the kebish and then bringing them from the kebish to the top of the mizbeach is an avoda.
What was the material? Was it covered with silver? The kebish.
The kebish was made out of stone. No, it wasn't. The pashtus, it wasn't covered with anything. You know?
Doesn't each reaction if it's stone?
I guess it was smooth. It was smooth stone. It was marble or some other smoothish stone like that. So yeah. So no, if the shamir worm actually they couldn't necessarily use for the stones of the mizbeach. Tosfos discusses that in one place because the problem is the shamir could cut through stone, sure, but it wouldn't make a smooth cut. It would be a little bit of a jagged cut. The stones for the mizbeach have to be like a shchita knife. It has to be that if you run your fingernail along them, you don't feel it doesn't catch.
What did they use?
So they had to use naturally smooth stones. The Mishnah and Midas mentioned that they would take stones, for example, from riverbeds or from the ocean or whatever, where they've been naturally polished and smooth by the water. Yeah. Or from deep underground, also they could find smooth, naturally polished stones or whatever. Yeah. So therefore, so Ella Ema, no, rather you have to say, not Halachas Evorim, but Halachas Eitzim L'Ma'arocha. When would they put salt on the mizbeach? When they're bringing up wood for the wood pile on the mizbeach, the lav avodah, that's not really considered so much of an avodah. Yes, the kohenim would do it, but it wasn't considered an avodah. They didn't specifically have to be wearing big de kahuna for that. So at that point, if there's a chatzitza between their feet and the kevesh, no big deal. After that, they would clean up the salt, and then, like we said, they could use it for salting the skins of the kodshim or whatever.
Now, this was done first thing in the morning or the end after all the shechita was done?
The pashtus said the putting the wood was one of the things fairly early in the morning.
Right, that's you know, we said, morning.
Well, so You have to remember, we say in morning davening, we have a bayah masada seida marocha. It's true that we don't completely hold by that, but that's another matter. It mentions over there, shnei gizrei etzim, but that's something else. There was a special mitzvah when they're bringing the korban tamid to specifically put two extra pieces of wood on the mizbeach at that time. But besides, before that, before they brought the korban tamid, they would set up the wood pile on the mizbeach. That I would actually, we're going to learn in Masech the Yoma when the time comes, Be'ez Hashem, that there were several wood piles on the mizbeach, a machlokas tanurim, whether there were two or three or four, and Yom Kippur, there was an extra one. But whatever the case, there were wood piles on the mizbeach, and those were set up before they shechted the korban tamid, or at least before they were offered on the mizbeach. So therefore, so then at that point they could spread salt on the kemish. Later on they could clear it off, and later on they could clear when it's going to be a problem of chatzitza, then they would clear it off. So that's it. So it's a lav avoda. He bringing etzim lamaracha is not an avoda. So at that point they could have salt on the kemish without a problem. Later on they would clear it off. Which actually then it comes out then, in other words, that the reason that the fact that it was mutter in the Bais Hamikdash is not really so different than it is in the Medina. We said they're not mevatel it. If they were mevatel it, then there would be a difference, because we're saying in the Medina, if you're mevatel it, then it's no good, like we said with straw, as opposed to in the Bais Hamikdash. But here we're saying ultimately in the Bais Hamikdash, they weren't mevatel it either. So it's not really an actual difference of, it's not really an actual difference of halacha. It's more of a practical difference. They're not mevatel the salt on the kevish and the mizmikdash, because they clear it off shortly afterwards. Therefore, you're allowed to do it. The same thing in the Medina, you would be allowed to do such a thing. In fact, by the way, the Prima Godim mentions, because of that, we see therefore that if you're not mevatel it, we're going to continue with the discussion about the straw now. But we see if you're not mevatel it, then you're allowed to sprinkle it on Shabbos. And he mentions, for example, in that connection, let's say sprinkling, if you have, let's say, for example, he mentions, for example, sprinkling sand where it's muddy or whatever, where you're not necessarily going to be mevatel it over there. Based on that, Shmitas Shabbos Kilchasa mentions a similar thing as far as sprinkling salt on an icy sidewalk or whatever, that you would be allowed to by the same logic.
But what is this mevatel? That's why I don't know.
The mevatel means that you're planning to leave it there permanently. In the case of the straw, you're not planning to leave it there permanently, because you can use it afterwards for animal food. So you're only leaving it there temporarily so you can get around without your feet getting too muddy.
So that's why you're allowed to use it.
That's why you're allowed to do it on Shabbos, right?
But if you aren't mevatel it,
then you wouldn't be allowed to. So in the Bais Hamikdash, they weren't mevatel it for a different reason, because as Rashi had said, then you're adding to the binyan, then you're adding to the structure of the Bais Hamikdash, and you can't do
that.
Not even for Shabbos. Not even a matter of Shabbos, right? Like Rashi says, on weekdays also you can't. Right.
So why are you allowed to do on Shabbos salt on ice?
So salt on ice is ultimately Shmiras Shabbos Kilchasa says, based on what the Prima Godim is saying, that he says that you're allowed to spread. He says that you're allowed to sprinkle, for example, sand when you have a muddy area or whatever. So he says, because apparently the idea is you're not planning to be mevatelit over there. It's a little hard to understand, because when you put salt on a sidewalk, you do plan to be mevatelit there. So it doesn't sound like the Prima Godim's logic should work, but nevertheless, he says it does.
But Shabbos, like right now, I mean,
you can't do it on Shabbos itself, because you can't do it on Shabbos itself anyway, unless you have an Eruv. If you have a, you know, we're talking about, you know, here in Crown Heights, it's a non-starter anyway.
So
you
don't have a problem where they have the Eruv.
Yeah.
If it's salty, if it's icy, you're allowed to throw salt.
So according to Shmir's Shabbos Kilchasa, you're allowed to.
On Shabbos.
On Shabbos, yeah. Obviously, if you do it before Shabbos, it's not an issue, yeah.
Right.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Onward. Darash Rava. So Rava one time daushin publicly in this connection, chotzer shenaskalkel b'meim mikshamim. Again, you have a chotzer that's messy with rainwater and it's all muddy. Maybe teben u'meradeba. Then you're allowed to bring straw and spread it out in the chotzer. Amaleta papa Rava. So the papa says to Rava, what do you mean you can just spread it out without any further details being needed? V'hatanya, we learn in a b'raisa, k'shu merada. When you're spreading out, you're allowed to spread out the straw in the chotzer, because again, like we said, you're not going to be mevatel it. But even when you're spreading it, you can't spread it out using a basket, which would be the normal way of doing it on a weekday, or with a box-like basket. Either way, that would be the normal way of doing it on weekdays, and you can't do that. Ella b'shule kupa. You can only do it with the bottom of the basket. Rashi. He says that means, let's say you have a basket which is broken and all you have left is the bottom of it. So you're allowed to use the bottom of it to spread out the straw, because that would be a shinui.
Different
than you do on weekdays. Tosfos says another possibility, that also shulei kupa would be like you turn the basket upside down. So like normally, in other words, I guess the idea is usually you turn over the basket and put the straw and have the straw fall out of it onto the ground, and then you spread it around. Here instead, you need to keep the basket right side up And then, like, you, I guess toaster doesn't specify, but I guess toaster means like you sort of shake it, and the straw comes out and lands on the ground. Either way, it's a shiggly.
Take it out.
Because Tosfos says, I'll be yad near the reed also. Tosfos says, to take it out by hand, the reed thinks that it would be also. Because that would be the regular way to take it out and spread it. Right. So therefore, it's not so simple to just say you can put straw. You need to make a shinu. So the Gemara continues, Hodr oikim Rava Amora alevedorosh. So later on, Rava set up an Amora in front of him. The Amora was, we know in many places in Shas, the Chacham many times would say what he wants to say quietly and briefly, and then the Amora would announce it in public to everybody else. So he set up an Amora, v'dorosh, and he daushin, dvorim shah ma'uti lefnechem, Torah sen biyadi. What I said previously before you was a mistake. Bram kach omrim mishum Rabbi Eliezer. Rather, this is what the Chachamim said in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, or Rabbi Lazar, it says on the side by me. What Rabbi Papa had informed Rabbi about this braisa, that yes, Rabbi Lazar or Rabbi Eliezer says that that's the din, and therefore that's how it is. Yes, you're allowed to spread out straw, but you have to do it with a shiddur. Then we said in the Mishnah, we said in the Mishnah that you're allowed to fill up water using a water wheel from the Bor HaGoyla and the Bor HaGadol that are in the Bismikdash. And then you have another well of that type called the Be'er HaKar, which is outside the Bismikdash, where you're only allowed to do it on Yom Tov. So now the point is that we have a water wheel involved over there. So now we're going to talk about, now one thing is when you use a water wheel, it makes a lot of noise. So that's going to lead us into the discussion about noise-making things on Shabbos. So the Gemara tells...
Even just the kier, right?
They had the muchni over there, right? And it made a loud noise. Out,
so Shabbos didn't bring it.
Fine, but that was a special case because the kier itself is needed for the avodah. And the whole point was they needed to lower the kier and raise it in order that the water in it doesn't become possible from lina. So that would be a special thing. That's needed directly for the avoida of the Bes Mikdash. But here we're talking about the Pashtos. They're drawing water for other purposes that they need in the Bes Mikdash. We're going to assume to start with that the problem with using a water wheel is the noise. So therefore, in the Bes Mikdash, fine, ain't shvus b'mikdash. But anywhere else, it would be an issue. So that's what we're going to discuss that. Yeah. So the Gemara starts, Ula ikla lebeir of Menashe. Ula visited the house of Reb Menashe. Osa hu gavra taref abava. A certain person came and knocked on the door. Omar, so Ula didn't like that. Knocking on the door is moilid koil. You're doing something that makes noise on Shabbos. And he held that any kind of noise on Shabbos is also. Omar, so he says, man hai, who is that person who's knocking on the door and being mechalal Shabbos? Lischil gufei. His body should be treated carelessly to come machaleh the Shabbos because he's treating Shabbos carelessly. They're very serious. Amalei Rabba, so Rabba tells him, or Rava it says on the side, loy asru ala keil shoshir. No, when the Chachamim asked making noise on Shabbos, it's only a musical type of keil. Because the concern is shemi yisak and clay shir that you might fix a musical instrument. So it doesn't apply to a noise that's just like knocking on the door, which is not musical at all. By the way, the Yerushalmi mentions that the Yerushalmi discusses this point also, and it mentions in this connection Rabbi Ila, who held, like Ula said, that any kind of noise making on Shabbos is also. So the Yerushalmi tells how one time Rabbi Ila came home on a Friday night late from the Beis Medrash, and everybody in his house was asleep. The door, I guess, was locked. He didn't want to knock on the door because of this problem, so he stayed outside the whole Shabbos.
They couldn't call name.
I guess everybody was asleep. I don't know. Maybe they didn't have windows.
Also noise, maybe.
No. Making a noise with your mouth is definitely mutter. Everybody agrees to that. No, we're talking about
those things. The
only way, I guess, I don't know. Maybe the house didn't have windows. I don't know. The Yerushalmi doesn't explain the details. But yeah, so he ended up staying outside the house the whole Shabbos. Yeah.
But you can't sing, right?
Singing is something else. That's right.
It's not
clay shear, but there is a point about, for example, about there's for example, you can't clap or do other things like that. Singing, I don't think. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, we're gonna go on and we're gonna continue over here in the Gemara. No, I don't think singing. I don't think there's any issur on singing. I mean, there's bechlal the question about whether you're allowed to sing even during the rest of the time. Also, we talked about it in there. And Yaakov Shia last week, Zimmer and Ellen Dalser, but that's a whole other matter.
In Lakewood, you play this thing, Shabbos.
Yeah. So singing is it.
Nowadays.
Okay. Ace Tve Abaya. So Abaya says, I have a contradiction. So you're telling me that that non-rhythmical noise or non-musical noise is motoraba. Only musical, rhythmical noise is also. But we learn in a braisa, malin bidiofi, you're allowed to get water from one container into another, like wine, as she says, from one barrel into another through a diofi, which is a siphon. Diofi means a siphon. Diofi means it has two mouths. We learned at the beginning of the Masechta, in the second paragraph, right, that diu means two. It comes from a Greek prefix. P means mouth. So it means something that has two mouths. So it's a siphon. You have two straws or something attached together. Where you start, what you do is you put the siphon from one barrel to another. You start sucking on the end of it to create a vacuum. And then it starts bringing, and then the water or the wine or whatever, the liquid, starts flowing from one to the other. If you ever had the occasion of having to siphon gas from a vehicle to another, then you have the same kind of thing. Yeah. Anyway.
One has to be lower than another one.
Probably. Yeah, one has to be lower than the other. Yeah. But anyway, so you're allowed to do that on Shabbos. Umatifin miyark l'choy l'b'Shabbos. And you're allowed to make water drip from a yark for a sick person on Shabbos. A yark, Rashi describes, is a keli with a very narrow mouth made out of metal. The bottom of it has a bunch of holes. When you put your finger over the top of it, then you have the water won't leak out the bottom. You see that nowadays, for example. Sure. Because then you have no air pressure pushing down onto it. But even when the top of it is open, the water only drips out of it a drop at a time because the holes on the bottom are very narrow. So what you do is you set this up. You set this up above a piece of above a metal keli, and therefore the drops drip on the metal keli, and they make a dripping sound. You hear as each drop falls. So you're allowed to do that for a chola, implying, one second, l'chola ein l'bori loy. It sounds like you're only allowed to do that for a sick person, not for a healthy person. Now, how does that work? Hechi dami, lav d'nim, aren't we talking about the case where the sick person is asleep? The kaboy d'litar, we want to wake him up. Now, you don't want to wake him up in the regular way because that might startle him and it might make his condition worse. So you set up something like this. You set up this yark, and this way you have that a drop, that as each drop falls, after a while, the noise of it wakes him up. So you see then that you're only allowed to do such a thing for a chola. So you see that ordinarily, even a non-musical noise is also on Shabbos, and only in this case, for the sake of a chola, are we allowing it. So what are you telling me against Ula that you're allowed to a non-musical noise, and therefore the guy's allowed to knock on the door?
You're using a
keli. Using a keli, so what? You're allowed to use keli on Shabbos.
No, not a keli for music, I thought.
No, but this is made for music, that's the point. The answer is, look, detir, no, it's the other way around. Suppose that the sick person can't fall asleep. The kaboy delenim, we want him to fall asleep. So what we want to do is we want to make a noise like a sort of like white noise, kind of almost, but like a pleasant rhythmical noise that eventually will lull him to sleep. So yeah, then that, in that case, that's what we're talking about, a musical noise.
When it rains, you know, people sleep good. You know?
Right. So in other words, that's what we're talking about. So that's the kind of thing you're allowed to do for a chola. But if it was the other way around, if you're doing it, so it's supposed to be like an irregular interval, so that after a while it wakes him up, that you'd be allowed to do even for a not sick person. So no proof. Okay, Esve, Abai says, I have another contradiction. Abraisa says, Hamashamir Peroisim Pnei Oifus, if a person is guarding his fruit to prevent the birds from getting at it and eating it, or he's watching his pumpkins or gourds or whatever dlas is exactly, something in that family of melons and pumpkins and gourds or whatever, that he's watching them because of wild animals. He can watch them like he usually does on Shabbos, but he's not allowed to clap his hands together. He's not allowed to bang his hands on his chest, to make a noise to scare away the birds or the animals. And he shouldn't dance like you do on weekdays. So you see, therefore, so the problem is my timer lab to come mode color. Isn't the problem that you're making a noise? So even though it's not necessarily a rhythmical noise, you're trying to do it to scare away the animals. So you're doing like a sudden clap or something, and still it seems to be saying it's usur. So in that case, that would show that anything that you're doing that produces a noise is usur. The answer is Amar Avach Bayakov. No, the reason why you can't do those things when you're watching the fruit to keep it away from the animals is for a different reason. Zeder Shemi Yitol Tzuro. The Chachamim are concerned that if you do the kind of things, clapping or bang or beating your chest or whatever, like you do on weekdays, what's another way you do to scare away the animals? You pick up a rock and you throw it at them. On Shabbos, beside the problem,
we have about throwing rock before.
We had in Shabbos, for one thing, that if a person throws a rock at an animal and zip and he's chayv from the malacha of choyvel. You also have the rocks themselves, of course, are mukta, but fine, that wouldn't be the reason because you don't make xera l'xera. But here you have the problem that if the animal is standing in Rosh Hashanah and you throw the rock at it, then you're throwing something from Rosh Hashanah in, from Rosh Hashanah into Rosh Hashanah.
He's guarding his he's guarding his own fence eating.
Yeah, let's say he's afraid that an animal is going to jump the fence or whatever, so he picks up a rock and throws. A bird is going to fly in or whatever, so he picks up a rock and throws it at it. Yeah, another context we have rocks throwing at animals is we talked about if a person can't, what's the minimum size rock that a person is chayav for carrying out to Rosh Hashanah on Shabbos is if it's large enough. We said in order to that it's large enough that if you throw it at an animal, it'll feel it. We had a machlokas over there, machlokas in the mission, actually, whether it's a size that, that a bird will feel it or an animal will feel it. The halacha, you need a larger one for an animal. The halacha is for an animal, because for a bird, you wouldn't even bother throwing a rock at it. You just yell at it.
Well, you'll miss it.
Well, that too, right, maybe. But the point is more that you, but bird, you could just yell at it.
Bird, pretty much every rock will fight.
That's the point, in other words. So therefore, say it's, yeah. So, okay. The point is, in other words, that here we're concerned that he might pick up a rock and throw it into Rosh Hashanah. So therefore, so that's why we don't want him to do the clapping or the banging or whatever, not because of the problem of Moilid Koil. Okay. So then the question is, if you're going to understand it that way, the Ela Hada Amr of Yehuda Amr Rav, what about this that Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rav, Noshim HaMasachbis Be'egoizim Aser, women, or anybody who passed this, but I guess it was more common for women to do this, and who are playing with nuts, where they take the nuts, they take like walnuts or something and roll them so that one of them bangs against the other one, sort of like kugelach, I guess, kind of.
So
such a thing is osur on Shabbos. My time, why would it be also lav to come molid kola? Isn't it again because of the problem of molid kola? You're making a bang, you're making a noise when one nut bangs against the other one. Also. So you see that even if it's not a rhythmical sound, it's just a sound stamp, then it would be also.
No bowling in Shabbos.
The answer is Lloyd. No bowling, yeah, I guess. The answer is Lloyd. No, that's not the reason. The reason it's also is Dilma Osila Ashvoye Gumus. The reason is because you might smooth out holes in the ground where you're doing this, which leads Tosfos to say in that case that, not actually Tosfos didn't mention it, but other Rishonim mentioned, if you're doing it on the table, then it's not necessarily a problem. The problem is only if you're doing it on the ground, if you're doing it on the floor. And then you can also talk about the question, is it also if most floors in the area are paved? We had a similar concept in Masechta Shabbos, for example, talking about whether you're allowed to sweep a floor on Shabbos, where if most of the floors in town are paved or whatever, then you have more of a het or two. So here might be something similar. So de'ilo temahochi, after all, continues the Gemara, if you're not going to say like that, if you're going to say it's a problem of making noise, ha de'amr of Yehuda, what about we have also the Yehuda says, noshim mesachbis b'tapuchi maser, that if women are playing with apples, then it's also aser. When one apple bangs against the other, hasa maya budakola, you don't really have a noise when one apple bangs into another apple. So it's obviously not a matter of ashmas koil. It's obviously eladilma osila ashvoye gomus. Obviously, it must be a matter of smoothing. And if you're going to be playing, you're rolling one apple against the other, like you say, sort of like bowling or whatever. Then if you're doing it on the ground, you might come to smooth out holes in the ground in order that the apple will roll more smoothly. And that would be, that while you're rolling the apple, it might smooth. No, that you might smooth out the ground over there beforehand in order that the apple will roll more smoothly. Which then, so in other words, it comes out so far that what we're saying is that it sounds like there isn't necessarily a problem with Ashmas Koil unless it's a musical sound, which would be like what Rabba is saying. Now, Tosfos brings Rabbi Hananel actually says that no, nevertheless, the halacha is like Ula, any kind of making noise on Shabbos, rhythmical or not, would be also. However, other Rishonim don't learn that way. They learn the halacha is in fact like Rabba. That is how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. So you're allowed to make non-rhythmical noises on Shabbos. You are allowed, for example, to knock on the door. What you're not allowed to do, though, is to use a keli whose purpose is to make noise, even if you're making a non-rhythmical noise like with it. An example is a door knocker. Some people have those door knockers hanging from their doors. That you wouldn't be allowed to use on Shabbos because its purpose is to make noise. So even though in this particular case, you're not using it for a rhythmical noise, nevertheless, that would still be awesome.
The noise that's made by the door.
Understood. So you can knock with your fingers, but not using the door knocker. Another point is also all of this is also talking about all of this is only talking about when you have a keli where the primary purpose of it is to make some kind of noise. When you have a keli, we're going to discuss now the matter of the water wheel of our Mishnah, where as you're using it, it makes a noise, but that's not its primary purpose. One thing it mentions in Shulchan Aruch, and that connection is, for example, you have the bells. So in some places they would have bells on the paroches, so that when they open the paroches, the bells would make a noise, would tinkle, and everybody would know that the Aron Kodesh is being opened and know to stand up. The purpose of those bells basically is to decorate the paroches. Therefore, you would be allowed to open the paroches, even though it's causing those bells to tinkle, because that's not the primary purpose of them. They have
that. No one does that anymore.
No one does that anymore. But you do have.
We almost have bells.
You have bells actually on the crowns of the Sifrei Torah that they often have. And yes.
You spoke about something about you want to take out the
stamina. Yeah, so they do say that maybe you should take out the clappers from them in order that way they're so this way fine they may tinkle against the sides of the keser of the crown and make a little bit of noise fine, but at least they don't have the clapper in them, they're not full fledged bells. Tosfos does also mention, as far as this matter of the nuts and the apples, you have the usual rule, mutav shu shegin, v'alyum azidin. So if the women do end up, or the kids do end up playing with apples or nuts on the ground or whatever, fine. It's not the right thing to do. But if they're, but you don't necessarily have to tell them not to, because better you mutav shu shegin, v'alyum azidin. It's very likely if you tell them, they're not going to listen anyway, and then they're going to be doing it b'mezid. And since it's only an isur d'rabbanan, then better they should stay shegin. And on the case with the nuts or the apples. So we're saying, again, according to Rabbeinu Hananel, it would in fact be also on the grounds of Mashmiya Kol. According to Rabba, which is how it's Paskin and Shulchan Aruch, that's not an issue because it's not a rhythmical, musical type noise. But as far as the matter of that, you might, so therefore on the table, it wouldn't be an issue. But if you're doing it on the ground where you might smooth out the dirt, then you have a Gzeira de Rabbanan not to do it. But it's one of those things that Mutav Shu Shegin V'Alyum Azidin. As far as the clapping and whatever, technically it says in Shulchan Aruch, you're not allowed to clap or dance or whatever on Shabbos. However, the minhag in later times developed that you could, for one thing, because we're not so expert at fixing clay shear. And that is, in fact, our minhag. It's brought in Sefer Minhagim, that Rebbe talked about it a number of times in Sichos, that yes, our minhag is that, especially when a Yom Tov comes out on Shabbos, that yes, we do clap and we do dance and we do sing and we do all those things. Yeah. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Now let's look at our Mishnah and see about this matter of Hashmas Kol. We said, you're allowed to fill up water from the Bor HaGolah and the Bor HaGadol using a water wheel on Shabbos in the Bismikdash, implying B'mikdash Ein B'medina Loi. Again, it's one of these things only in the Bismikdash, not anywhere else. My timer. Now, why should it be also anywhere else? Lav Mishum Da'i Lodi Kolah. L'chora, it would be because of the noise it makes when you're using the water wheel. It squeaks and it makes noises. But also, and therefore it's also. So fine, the Bismikdash Ein Shvus B'mikdash, but everywhere else it would be also. Even though it's not a rhythmical, musical noise, which would be like Kolah, not like Rabbah.
But oil, Vaseline, wouldn't I think it
would work? And maybe if they put some oil, fine, it would work for a couple of weeks. I don't know. Eventually, it's going to start making noises again. I don't know. The answer is loy. No, that's not the reason. The reason is, if you're going to draw water with a water wheel, you might draw more water and use it to, it's easy, because the point is, in other words, Rashi says, when you have to dip a bucket in there and fill it up, it's a lot of tircha to do. So you're not likely to take any more than extra than you need. But when you use a water wheel, it's so much easier to do it. You may end up filling up more water and using it to water your garden or your churva on Shabbos. And of course, that would be Malacha Daraisa.
What's a churva?
A churva is literally a ruined house. But it's
why would you water it?
You would water it because, let's say, right now, you're not planning to rebuild it anytime soon. So meanwhile, you're using it as like a garden or something. You're using it temporarily to grow plants in it, meanwhile, until you get around to rebuilding it. You know, sort of, you know, kind of the same way as, for example, you know, in Manhattan, when you have places where they tear down a building and they, for whatever reason, they're not going to be rebuilding it for a while, they make it into a parking lot. So the same thing, you know, you have your churba, you're not going to be building it for some time, so you might as well grow some vegetables in there or whatever. Yeah. So which leads Tosfos to say, by the way, and this is brought lahalacha in Shulchan Aruch, that this only applies to a large water wheel. If it's a small one, then you don't have an issue.
Why?
Because only a big one, are you likely to say that I have a life, I can easily draw so much water, I might as well use the extra to water my garden. But if it's a small one,
it's going to be easier because it takes a lot less effort to put it.
No, but you also get a lot less water each time. So the Gemara tells, Amemer shorter the mimla begilgala b'mechuzah. Amemer allowed them to fill up water using a water wheel in mechuzah on Shabbos. Omar, because he said, my time it goes rabbon. And after all, what was the reason the Chum made the gzera not to use a water wheel? Shami yamala, the gunaso chabase, because he might fill up water for his garden or for his churba. Well, hocha loy gina ikka v'loy churba ikka. Here, there's no garden nearby, there's no churba nearby. So therefore, it's similar again to this matter of the sweeping the floors. If most of the floors in the area are paved, then you don't have an issue. The same thing over here. If you don't have a ginner or a chorva nearby, then it's not an issue. However, kiven de kachaza, later on though our neighbor saw, that they were using the water on weekdays to soak flax in it. Or Rashi has another girsa that the word is bun, not kitna, but bunsa, which means spelt. Anyway, the point is they were using it to soak that, they were using the extra water that they were drawing on weekdays in order to soak flax or spelt in it, which either way, it's an Isser Shabbos. So then also Bahu, so then he said it's also on Shabbos, because fine, they're not gonna use it for a garden or a churva, but they're gonna use it for other purposes, which is also on Shabbos. So therefore, he told them it's also. Rabbi Hanano has yet a third girsa that the word not kitna and not bunsa, but rather kinti, which means water that they would use to make clay pots and things. Anyway, whatever it is, the point is he saw that there are other purposes they can use the water for, which are also on Shabbos, and therefore it's like having a ginner or a churva there. Same problem. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, when be'er hakar, you're allowed to fill up water from the using a water wheel from the Be'er Hakar on Yom Tov. So my Be'er Hakar, or Heker, or however it's pronounced, Amashmul Bershe Hikru Aleo Dvorim Behitirua. It means it was a pit or a well of water where they discussed, they had a lot of discussion about it, back and forth about it, and they ended up being matir. Rashi describes when they came from Golus Babel to build the second Beis Mikdash, they needed that water. So they were discussing back and forth. There is an issur de rabbanon, as we're saying, to use a water wheel in general. But in this case, should we be allowed to, because we desperately need water for ourselves and our animals and whatever. And they ended up being matir. So therefore, only that one is mutter, because they ended up needing that one at the time. The Rogachover actually says a line on this that says, you see from this, in some cases, when something is mutter one time, then it stays mutter even after that, even when circumstances change. Because we see over here, once they were matter at the beginning, then it stays mutter afterwards. On Yom Tov.
In the case we just learned it changes mind.
So when you find that there's a reason to answer it because they might do end up doing an issue, that's different. But So the Gemara says Macy. I have a contradiction though. A Brisa says loy kol aboras hakoras hitiru. The Chachamim, when they said you're allowed to draw from the Be'er Hakar, not from any well of Kar, are they matir ela zubilvad, only this one. The Amat Shehikru Dvarim Aleo, if you're going to say Shehikru, meaning Lashon Kriya, that they called out and had many discussions about it back and forth, my Zubilvad, what do you mean only this one? This is the only one that they had such a discussion about. So it's not relevant to talk about any other Bor Hakar. What other Bor Hakar? There's no other one that they had this kind of discussion, pro and con about. El Amr of Nachum Yitzchok Be'er Mayim Chayim. No, what it was a well of living water, meaning fresh spring water that wells from under the ground. And they called it Be'er Hakar, Shenema Kahoki Bayu Me'er Abagomer. You have a pasuk in Yirmiyah, like a well that wells forth water. The same way the pasuk goes on to say, so the Jewish people are always welling up and coming up with new ways to do Avedas. So in other words, so we see that the word kahokir, or the word heker or hoker of our Mishnah, means something that wells forth. So it means a well that was constantly welling forth more water. And therefore they called it Be'er Hakar. So now we understand. The Braisa says, not all wells that well forth from underground are you allowed to use a water wheel with on Yom Tov. Only this one, because they were matir at the time. I thought about it today, by the way. I mentioned it here in Shul today, that the two explanations that we have over here about why this thing was called Be'er Hakar are sort of similar to the first two wells that Yitzchak dug, which it says that they had fights about with the Plishtim. The first one is they called it Esek, ki his askuim, right? They argued with him about it, like we're saying in the first explanation of the Gemara, that they argued back and forth about this well. And the second one is just sitna, just stam, hatred without a reason, which is, might be reflected in what the Gemara is bringing, that the word Hakar is related to the word to a pasuk that describes the Averis of the Jewish people.
Wow.
Yeah. I thought of that. I haven't seen it anywhere, but once in a while I come up with a chiddush. I don't know if it's valid. Anyway, Gufa, getting back to, we said Loi Kol Abodas HaKodesh Hitiru, the Chachamim would not matter all of the welling forth wells, like we said, Ela Zubilvad, only this one. So what happened? when the people came from the Gola, from Bavel, Chonu'aleho, they camped by that well. And then, as we said, they decided that that they should be allowed to draw water from it using a water wheel. U'nevi'im shebeinein hitirulahem. The Nevi'im who were with them, Chagei, Schari, and Malachi, told them that it's mutter. And actually, the Gemara says, v'loi Nevi'im shebeinein. Actually, it wasn't really the Nevi'im who told them that it's mutter. Ela minag avoisam yedehem, they had the minag of their ancestors. They knew that in the previous generations, before Golas Babel, before Churban Bayis Rishon, they had drawn water from that well using the water wheel on Yom Tov, and therefore they were allowed to continue doing that. So in other words, the point is, on Shabbos, you're not allowed to, because there's too much of a concern that you might fill up extra water to water your garden or whatever. But on Yom Tov, the Chachamim were matur. And again, like this, the logical thing to do would have been to say no, the same as everywhere else. But because they were matur at that one time, because they badly needed it, therefore it remained mutter even after that.
And the chashash of watering the Yom Tov as well, right?
Yeah, you're not allowed to water gardens on Yom Tov either. That's the point. In other words, objectively, it should have been also on Yom Tov as well. But because they were matur it on that one time, because minig avaseim biyadeim, therefore it remained mutter even after that.
The same thing over here, where we said that when Amira promoted the other well, and then on Shabbos, and then he had the dirty one.
But that's the point. In other words, here we're not saying that there was any particular problem that later on developed where they might be using the water from this well for other purposes. Where he saw that they actually are, then he had no choice but to ask it. Here it's just, there's a general gzera about using water wheels on Shabbos, so therefore, and on Yom Tov, but in this particular case, because they were matu at the one time, then therefore that was an exception to the gzera. Okay, everyone, we'll finish the last two amudim tomorrow, Bas Hashem, and